It's not because God is not working in your life. God is always at work. He's always at work to move you toward His design for you. And if the problem remains and God has not delivered you, which He could do, but if the problem remains, the likeliest explanation is that God wants you to look at something deeper going on in your soul. How do you relate as a man? What's going on with you beneath the pornographic issues? What kind of husband are you? What kind of dad are you? You start looking at those kinds of issues, and then I think the Spirit of God has you where He wants you, to release you to be the man that He's called you to be. And then maybe the desire for pornography will become overcomable. But maybe not until you face the struggles that are in your soul as you want to relate to your wife, to your children, to your friends as a real man. Of course not. There's a sense in which you enjoy the pleasure because sin is frankly enjoyable. As a matter of fact, the Bible teaches that. There are pleasures in sin, but then the little extra phrase there, for a season. So do you want to get well? Do you want to change? Do you really want to get over this pornography issue? Well, the fact is that part of you does and part of you doesn't. So then the real question is, which part is stronger in your soul? The flesh within you says, I want relief from my pain. This works really well. It gives me certain pleasure that feels like it makes me whole for a moment, and all that's attractive. And that'll be attractive until the day you die. I'm 64 years old. I'm not a kid. I've been a Christian for 56 years, and there are still temptations within my life that are very, very appealing. But is there something else in my soul? Do I have some other desire that competes with the sinful desire? And the answer is, yeah, I'm a Christian, and so are you. And if you're a Christian, then there's something in you that really wants to become a godly man, and that's available to you. Do you want that? Of course you do.
The question is deeper, do they really want to get well in their soul, in their heart? Is this just a problem I have with this particular activity? Or is it more, I've got a problem deep inside that I've got to take a look at? The man who is going to progress, who's going to work through this, the guy who's going to get well, is the guy who sees this is a deep heart issue, and it goes far deeper than just looking at pictures and seeing things that I shouldn't be seeing. It goes far deeper. That's the guy who's going to get well.
Martin Luther has a well-known little image to help with this question. He says that you really can't stop a bird from flying over your head and maybe even stopping for a time, but you can stop the bird from making a nest in your head. And there's not a man alive who's healthy who doesn't struggle with temptation. That's just the nature of the human condition until we get home. But the problem begins when that desire for illegitimate pleasure through pornography, when that desire for illegitimate pleasure through any means other than what God defines as moral, when that desire becomes compulsive and it feels like you've lost all sense of freedom, and it feels like the freedom to choose, the freedom to say no, when that goes away and it becomes a life-dominating condition, then at that point I would say you need to start thinking about there's something here that needs some pretty real heavy thought and maybe some real effective conversation with people that know what they're doing.
A man has a problem with pornography when he's looking. Now, it doesn't mean everybody who sees it is addicted to it. But you've got a problem if you just linger too long on that commercial or that station as you're doing some surfing, or as you're thumbing through a magazine and you just kind of stop and pause and soak in more than what you know is legitimate. You kind of can sense it in your heart. Oh, that's just I'm being a guy. No, that's different. The fact that we are drawn to beauty and there is sexual desire, but in a context where you're taking something that doesn't belong to you, that's when it's a problem. That's the problem with pornography. Where there's an addiction, well, the term I would put is when it's compulsive, when it's something you gotta have. It's gotta feed something inside that you can't let go of on your own. That's addiction.
Can God work through His own resources? Of course He can. Might He deliver you from pornography without talking to somebody? Is it possible? I'm never going to limit God. But His plan is to be in community. And His plan is for you to be talking to somebody with whom you feel safe, somebody who's not going to yell at you, judge you, recoil, or give you simple pat answers or just pray with you, but somebody who's going to get to know you at the level of your soul, someone who's going to engage with you. Don't go to your grave with a secret. Because secrets have power that are broken when they become non-secrets.
Breaking free from any addiction is difficult. And I don't believe anyone can really do it on their own. That's why we need to have people around us that we can talk to. The problem is we just aren't honest people. We aren't honest with ourselves. We aren't honest with our spouses. And we need to have somebody that we take the risk of telling the truth. One of the hardest commitments you'll ever make in your life is to pretend about nothing. And if you're going to be genuine, if you're going to be authentic, you have to tell the truth to someone, a trusted friend, a counselor, a pastor, somebody that you might even be able to point you to somebody else to say, look, this is beyond me, but I'll walk with you there to begin this process of breaking free from this addiction.
Most people that would answer that question would move in the direction of saying, well, here are some steps you can take. I had one friend who, when he was in a hotel room, he would put a pillowcase over the television. And he would say, this will keep me from watching it. My thought is, that's just sin management. That's not going to get you anywhere. Are there helpful things and just resisting the flesh and making no provision? Yeah, of course. But if you want to take some real steps to have meaningful victory, to have meaningful release of who you are as a man, to such a degree of joy and purpose that pornography becomes a side issue and eventually a non-issue, if that's what you're after, then the first step I'd suggest, explore the quality of your relationships. Don't focus on the pornography. Explore the quality of your relationship as a man, as a husband. Talk to your wife and say to her, when do you find me really masculine? Do you know how to relax in my presence? Does my strength bring you a sense of rest? Talk to your kids. What am I like to have for a dad? I can recall talking to my kids. What am I like to have for a dad? And I got responses I wasn't crazy about. But it led me to think through who I am as a man and maybe to take some steps toward becoming the real man that God has called me to be. And the more I've done that, the more I've begun to enjoy the fact that God has called me into masculinity. I'm a guy, I'm a man, I'm masculine. And the more that's released, then the less pornography has its hold. So my first most important suggestion, explore the quality of your relationships. What impact do you make on wife, on kids, on friends?
Tell somebody you trust that you've got a struggle. Get some feedback from them and ask them, hey, how do I wrestle? Where do I go with this? That may be something you need to walk together, to have a buddy who walks side by side with you. But remember, because you have a problem, it doesn't mean there isn't a solution, that you can get help, but you need to reach outside of yourself. So tell somebody, get a buddy that you can share with, somebody you trust. But secondly, recognize that this is a deeper struggle than just, I got a bad behavior, I got a bad habit, need to change a habit. This goes a little bit deeper. This goes far deeper. It goes to something that's really in our hearts. And so recognize as one of the key steps, yeah, I got a problem, I got to tell somebody, and this goes deeper than just a surface rearrangement. This goes to heart change.
I would love to see men deeply understand the core terror in a woman's soul. Every woman is raised without perfect love because no dad is perfect, no mom is perfect. Women typically have a struggle saying, could I ever be seen and deeply wanted? Women feel invisible typically. There are exceptions, of course. I don't want to paint the brush too broadly. But women have a terrible fear that if seen, I wouldn't be wanted. There's nothing in me to see that you would desire. So then when a man moves elsewhere for his sexual fulfillment into pornography, even though it really isn't because his wife isn't attractive to him, even though that isn't the issue at all, she's going to hear it as a confirmation of her worst fear. And every time you engage in pornographic addiction, every time you engage in watching your computer screen to look at other women or to look at whatever your favorite form of pornography might be, what you're saying to your woman, she won't tell you this likely. I hope she can at some point, but what you're saying to your woman basically is your fear is legitimate, your fear is justified. There is no beauty in your soul that is so compelling to me that I want to cherish, I want to protect, I want to be there, I want to awaken what is beautiful within your soul. She's going to hear you say, I see nothing of beauty within you. And that's going to cost. That's not a good thing. You need to face the price that you're asking your wife to pay by not dealing with your pornography addiction. I think one of the scariest things is to realize how deeply the trust has been broken. A man is not going to feel terribly adequate to know how to rebuild that trust. And maybe the first step is to talk with your wife about what she's struggling with and what is really happening within her and let her know you're a safe enough person for her to be honest about how much pain she's in and how deeply the trust has been broken and that this is going to take some time. You're not going to be able to just hold hands and pray together and she'll be fine tomorrow morning. This is going to take some time. But maybe the way to take the time, maybe what to do during the time that it takes, is to be able to look at your wife and say, honey, I have failed you very, very badly. Your pain is very, very deep. And I'm not going to back away from that. And I'm not going to try to fix you quick. but I'm going to do all that I know what to do to be a real man of God. And if you can sense the commitment in my soul toward God, and you can see it in the way I relate to you and to my kids from now on, with failures along the way, if you're looking for perfection, you got the wrong guy. But if you're looking for commitment, I think you have the right guy. And over time, I really hope that the pain I've caused you will become less than the degree to which you can trust that my heart really is toward God and therefore is toward you. I don't want to hurt your soul.
Trust is one of the hardest things to rebuild in any relationship, no matter what the circumstance might be, no matter what the struggle might be. Once trust is betrayed and broken, if there is a formula, the only formula I know is consistency over time. Now, does that mean that you're going to be able to rebuild the trust so that she's never going to have a doubt ever in her life, that you're totally dependable? I don't believe that's ever the case, because none of us is totally trustworthy apart from God doing His work in our lives. But I really believe you can go a long way towards rebuilding that trust if you take the long view and say, incrementally, a thin layer at a time. It's like the fine finish on a piece of furniture. If I'm going to do a lacquer finish on a piece of woodwork that I've done, it goes on a thin layer at a time. That's how you rebuild trust, a thin layer at a time. And over time, the consistency that you have in offering your heart to her, your integrity, your honesty, will begin to rebuild the trust that's been broken.
There's lots of obvious ones that I presume you can think of yourself in terms of what you do with your computer and what blocks you put on, and those kinds of things are very important and very helpful, and I would think that's important to do. My mind goes perhaps in two directions. One, to put the safeguards in place that are going to have some real power. The first thing is, there somebody in your life that knows in depth what you're struggling with? Don't go to your grave with a secret. Make sure there's somebody who has seen you at your worst and still believes in you. And that likely should be a male friend, maybe a pastor, maybe a counselor, a male friend. But if somebody who sees you at your worst and who still believes in you. The second thing I'd say to you is, pay attention to what are the deepest desires in your soul. What do you want the most? Do you want relief when you feel inadequate? Or do you want courage to move through your inadequacy? And if you face your deepest desire, you're going to find that the appeal of pornography, though still strong, will become resistible, because it's not going to meet the deepest desires of your soul.
There's some obvious protection that you can put into place. One is, you got to be talking to somebody. You have to be downright level honest with somebody about where you struggle. If you're trying to keep the secret and you're trying to manage, I call it managing a sin problem on your own, that'll never work. You need to have somebody in on the inside, on your inside, that you invite in and you tell all to. So you need to have somebody there that you're connected with. The other thing is, you can put safeguards on your computer. There are computer programs that you can buy that not only prevent you from going somewhere, but that if you do go somewhere you shouldn't be going, it sends an email to your buddy, who's your inside man, so to speak. It sends an email and says, hey, your place is where you shouldn't be. That kind of accountability means he gets to call you on it. And so putting those things voluntarily on your machine, on your computer, if it means eliminating cable, getting rid of some things that are more tempting than others, take those steps. Don't make provision for the flesh. Don't indulge that. You can take those kind of steps, but you got to be dealing with what's going on in the inside. What's the heart of this?
So often, when a man who struggles sexually, whether he's had an affair or whether he watches pornography or whatever the sexual difficulty might be, I found so often men will tell their wives to take the burden off themselves and put it on them. And they're essentially asking sometimes, honey, let me tell you where I fail. Please, you do your job so I won't feel so bad about myself. If that's the way you confess your sin, it'll cause more harm than good. But if rather than that, if you understand what the word centered means, if you understand that because of God, you are not demanding from your wife acceptance. You're not requiring her to come through for you, but you're sharing some very difficult material with her, ultimately for her sake, not for yours. And if you're saying, I have the courage to face what's happening in me because I know I've hurt you, and that breaks my heart more than anything else, and I don't want to spend the rest of my life hurting you, I'm telling you so I can move towards you with the courage that God has put within me to bless your soul, which I simply haven't done very well. But that's the reason I'm talking about this with you now.
If you're just confessing so you feel relief from your pain, that's the whole wrong motivation for doing it. Part of confession is so you can rebuild something that you broke. You broke trust with her, you betrayed her, and you confessing to her is saying, honey, I'm gonna get back in the game. I'm really gonna invest, and I'm gonna tell you the truth, and I know this is gonna hurt, and this is awful, but I've done this to you. And then listen to her talk to you about the impact that it has had on her. It may be the most difficult thing you've ever listened to, but you must listen to what it's done to her.
Every time you watch pornography, something in your masculine soul withers. Something about you as a man is reduced. Every time you watch pornography, you are reinforcing the natural inclination of fallen man to say, I hurt, somebody take care of me, as opposed to being a man. And then you're getting a cheap thrill. You're getting the pleasures of masculinity without having to be masculine. Therefore, every time you watch pornography, you're setting yourself up to be a failure as a husband. You're setting yourself up to move toward a woman that God perhaps brings into your life, not with the profound privilege and high calling of, I'm a man and I can awaken the beauty in this woman's soul and I can give her a chance to feel cherished and alive as a woman and enjoying her femininity. Every time you watch pornography, you're saying, no, that's not my agenda. I really have a higher agenda. I'm needy. Why don't you come through for me? And that's not what you want to do. You want to move toward your wife as opposed to being like a tick on a dog. How wrong to ask anybody to be your dog while you tick into them, whether it's pornography or a wife. That's not the way to relate. There's a different way to relate, and pornography will get in the way.
You would always be extremely critical of any woman you would be involved with later because she's never going to be able to match up to what you've seen, to what you've exposed your heart to in all the pornographic images. They aren't real. They're a fantasy. They're made up. And fantasy can always feel a whole lot better than the reality of a real relationship. And that's why it has an allure and appeal. And what it does, it sets you up for those unrealistic expectations. It also sets you up to exploit women, to objectify women, and exploit them for their physical attractiveness, primarily, while ignoring what's going on inside of them. I mean, this is someone's daughter that you're looking at. And so you're missing the whole point of the inner beauty of a woman. When you look at pornography, you're taking one thing and exploiting it and really not enjoying the core of who a woman is. That's the kind of destructiveness that pornography sets you up for.
The Bible talks about the beauty of a woman's soul. Peter in 1 Peter 3 talks about the beauty of a woman and says the beauty of a woman is not centered in her externals, whether it's the wearing of jewelry or her hairdo, the wearing of nice clothes. Nothing's wrong with all that. But the man who looks at pornography loses his ability to discern the core beauty in a woman's soul. And you begin to require that your woman at an external level be there to meet your sensual needs, as opposed to realizing that there is a beauty in her soul that even if over time she puts on a lot of weight, even as you get older, she no longer is as attractive as she once was when she was 25, that no matter what is going on with your wife, whether it's weight struggles, whether it's cancer and she loses a breast, whether it's chemotherapy and she loses her hair, in the middle of all of that, whether she gets a disease and is in a wheelchair, is there something about a man that can look at his woman and say, I see an indestructible beauty in your soul, and I believe it's there by God's grace. You are a feminine woman who has a core beauty that nothing can destroy. When you watch pornography, you're going to lose sight of that, and you're going to demand that the externals satisfy your soul, and they never will. They might get you titillated, but they won't satisfy you. But the joy of seeing your woman's beauty at her core, I don't think I see anything more beautiful, really, than watching an old man love an old wife and think she's just gorgeous in the depths of her being. That's the beauty that pornography will block you from seeing. Every time you watch pornography, something in your masculine soul withers. Something about you as a man is reduced. Every time you watch pornography, you are reinforcing the natural inclination of fallen man to say, I hurt, somebody take care of me, as opposed to being a man. And then you're getting a cheap thrill. You're getting the pleasures of masculinity without having to be masculine.
God created us as males. As men, He made us to have male desires. And part of that is legitimate sexual desire that God has given to us. What pornography does, it takes and exploits that. It changes that to the point where all that we focus on is our sexual conquest. We see ourselves as men who are out there to exploit, to explore, and to gain. And the whole focus of pornography is on me as the individual. So as a man, pornography takes and exploits my maleness. Not only does it exploit the female beauty, but it exploits my maleness and takes and destroys that to the point where I really don't believe I have an impact without having something that's coming at me, that something is feeding me. I'm not taking the initiative. I'm waiting for it all to come towards me. So it really undermines my confidence as a man to be able to have a meaningful relationship with a woman based on who I am according to God in His image and who she is according to God as a woman in His image.
When a man fails you by moving elsewhere for sexual pleasure, all sorts of things are going to go on in your heart and in your spirit and your stomach and your soul. And one of the things is going to be a degree of confusion. What is going on? Why do I feel so bad? Why do I feel so threatened? Why is this getting to me so deeply? Why do I just not know what to do? Why do I feel so confused? And I would suggest that perhaps the most direct answer I can give to that question is when a man cheats on you sexually by watching pornography or an affair, whatever the case might be, it really stirs what you're most afraid of. You came into your marriage, as every woman does. Every man comes into a marriage with his baggage, and every woman comes into a marriage at some level wondering, when a man sees me, will he want me? And when he sees you after being married for a while and goes somewhere else, something in you gets very confused. Do I just not have what it takes? Is there no beauty within me? Does nobody desire me? I wasn't desired by my dad. I wasn't desired as a teenage girl. I was raped. I was abused. I had all sorts of bad things happen. And I wanted somebody to see me and to want me with a tender, a courageous desire to be with me, to want me. And then I end up hurting so badly. It's because your core terror has been touched in some very, very painful ways. One of the patterns that I've seen in counseling a lot of folks, abuse victims, my wife has been public about this. She was an abuse victim for 4 years, so I have some firsthand relationship with a woman who has gone through the horrors of abuse. And when your husband is watching pornography, it really is a form of abuse. And when you're an abuse victim, the most natural tendency for any abuse victim, male or female, we're talking to you now as a woman, but the most common reaction is to say, it's my fault. Somehow, if I could have been better, if I could have responded differently, this wouldn't have happened. Why does an abuse victim blame herself as opposed to realistically understand that the perpetrator, the rapist or the husband who's watching pornography, it's really what they did and they were wrong and that's true, but why does an abuse victim say, no, it's me? Let me tell you the answer to that. The woman says it must be me because then she has the hope of control. If there's something in me that's wrong, then maybe I can straighten it out. And maybe if I become the woman I need to be, then I'll be able to cure him. That puts an incredible pressure on you that's unnecessary and unrealistic. And I think that's a lot of the reason why there's just a sense of self-hatred in the middle of being subjected to a husband's pornography.
The almost universal way that we look at problems is if something goes wrong in any relationship, we automatically turn the look back on ourselves saying, what did I do wrong that I could avoid so it would never happen again? Women are especially vulnerable to that kind of thinking when their husband is trapped in pornography. For me as a counselor to reassure a woman, one, the problem with pornography is not you. Now, I automatically say that to women and they kind of roll their eyes and go like, yeah, really? They don't quite believe that. And part of my work with them is to help them understand it isn't about them as a woman. This has to do with what's going on in their man. That is so hard for a woman to believe that because she really believes I'm supposed to bring something to the table, and apparently what I've brought to the table isn't worth all that much, at least not desired by my man. And that is one of the core longings of a woman's soul. She wants to know that her beauty draws her husband, draws her man into meaningful relationship with her, that he sees her as beautiful. What pornography does is undermine a woman's confidence that she's a beautiful woman made in God's image, worthy of love and respect. It's not wrong to feel hurt or angry. This is something that's been done to them, in a sense. Their husband's involved in this illicit fantasy affair off to the side, and not focusing on them. A woman is going to feel hurt. It's natural for her to feel hurt. And when she feels hurt, the question is, hey, when you feel sinned against, you're going to feel hurt. You're also going to feel some anger because there's something unholy that you know has taken place. The problem would be if she camps only on her anger, not her pain. It's easier for a woman to feel more angry than hurt, because anger feels like, hey, I can do something with this. I can grab hold of it and do something. The hurt, all you can do with it is feel it. And for a woman to say, how do I deal with this kind of intense pain, this kind of rejection, this kind of betrayal? How do I deal with that? Means she has to be willing to invite God into the middle of that pain. That's the only way she doesn't camp more on the anger than on the pain. But she's got to start with where she's at. She's battling with that, and God's going to start right there with her as well.
One of the most important things about the Christian journey is to recognize that every journey begins from where you are, not from where you wish you were, not from where you pretend to be. When you say, am I wrong? I shouldn't feel hurt. I shouldn't feel angry. I shouldn't feel confused. I shouldn't feel this. I shouldn't feel insecure. I shouldn't feel so resentful. My sense to you is, well, that's maybe not the most mature thing in the world to feel, but it's where God accepts you. It's where God meets you. You've got to begin with a full acknowledgement of where you are. You sit back and you say, this is me now. Is it good? Is it bad? I'm not sure how to evaluate that, but this is me. This is what's happening. God only meets you where you are. He never meets you where you pretend to be. He never meets you where you wish you were. He meets you where you are. Accept where you are. It's not a lot of fun, but it's the beginning of a good journey. If forgiving means that you no longer hurt, then no, forgiveness isn't possible. If trust means that you no longer fear, then no, trust is not possible. But if forgiveness means that you can find the resources within your soul to give this man the womanhood that's within you, to give this man God's calling on your life as he moves forward toward God and you're going to support him, if forgiveness means that you can find the resources to be there with him and for him, then yes, forgiveness is possible. If trust means that you know that there's something inside of you that your husband at his worst cannot destroy, but that you believe that in the center of his soul, he really wants to move forward as a man, knowing he might fail again. Trust does not mean guaranteed perfection. Trust means that you honor his commitment, you believe it's there. If that's what forgiveness and trust means, then yes, it's possible. And as a matter of fact, it's a wonderful privilege and opportunity.
Those are two of the most difficult and complex questions that women ask me. And they are difficult and they are complex, because total trust is what we want to be able to have. To be able to completely forgive is what we want to be able to do. And yet we have all these little things that are coming at us, little things that lure off to the side to say, like, yeah, but wait a minute. If he's betrayed you once, chances are he's probably going to do it again, because he's not totally trustworthy. He's a flawed man. And so for her to learn how to trust, even when she knows he's not totally trustworthy, is really a work of the Spirit of God in her heart. And again, it's something that goes on a layer at a time. His consistency over time will encourage her trust. Does she offer it like a blank check to him? Oh, no. Rebuilding trust goes on a layer at a time. She can offer love, and her loving involvement and her commitment to him, but that trust layer gets rebuilt one thin layer at a time, and that can grow. If forgiving means forgetting that he ever did this, no, that can't happen. Forgiving is not forgetting. Forgiving means we have to be willing to cancel the debt that somebody owes us that we can't forget. The only way that can be done, again, is through the work of the Spirit of God and softening a woman's heart, saying, you know what, I've tasted forgiveness for my life. I can offer a taste. But again, it is a progressive kind of thing. It's not this carte blanche type of thing that, oh yes, wholesale, take care of it all at one shot. It's a growing process of both rebuilding trust and being able to offer forgiveness.
The answer is an unqualified but a difficult yes. It's unqualified because I believe with all my heart. I've seen it many, many times. I've not failed my wife in these particular ways that we're talking about, but I don't think that my failure of my wife has been any less harmful to her than the pornographer's failure of his wife. My wife was sexually abused for 4 years running from ages 8 to 12. And I believe with all my heart, this will sound like a little extravagance, but I think it's true. I believe by my insensitivity to my wife at times that I likely have damaged my wife more than her abuser. And yet the question is, can our marriage ever be what it really could be? And the answer is, when you suffer failures, when there are real difficulties, then you're facing a situation that cannot be repaired apart from the resources of God. When you have a relationship that only grace can restore, celebrate, because now you're in line for a different kind of relationship. You're now in line for the kind of relationship where grace actually becomes the foundation of a relationship. That's available to you no matter what has taken place in your marriage. Now, if your husband backs away and doesn't deal with things, well, we have some other problems to have to consider. But if your husband is a repentant man who loves God somewhere down deep in his heart in the middle of his failures, and he works through this, your relationship literally can be better than ever because it'll be built on a more solid foundation of grace.
I'm here to say that God can restore relationships. I've watched Him do that. I've watched Him help people heal their hearts as He's produced healing in their hearts to draw the two of them back together. But the caution is this, it takes time. This is a journey, a healing journey that they each have to travel. And the bumpy road of this healing journey is she may progress in ways faster than him, or he may progress faster, and they have to be patient with one another in this process. The growth process is rarely that they both go together. It's a back and forth kind of thing. And so they need to be patient with this process. But we do have a God who helps heal broken hearts. And He helps mend broken relationships. And He can heal even after this kind of a difficult struggle. One of the difficult questions for a woman to face is when her husband really doesn't take this issue seriously. When he's not saying, yeah, this is a problem I really need to deal with. Well, either he's ignoring it, or he's minimizing it, or he's saying, that's not that big a deal. What does she do? She's in a real difficult place. She's still called to love him and to respect him. Does that mean that she kind of agrees with everything he does? No, not by any means. But part of loving him means choosing to do what is good for him. The passage in 1 Peter, where Peter in 1 Peter 3 speaks to women, and at the end of that, around verse 6, he says, don't give way to fear in choosing to do what is good. Don't give way to the fear of, okay, if I do good to him, how's he going to respond? He may run from her. He may withdraw from her. He may abandon her. There's any number of things that he might do that cannot deter her from what I would call her primary call to follow the lead of her Savior, to follow God's call for her to be a loving woman. But loving him is going to look different depending on how he responds. Part of loving him may be drawing some firm boundaries to say, this cannot continue in our relationship this way. You have to take a look at this, and you need to be able to take steps to demonstrate that you're in, that you're renewing a commitment to really only have eyes for me in this relationship. She can't demand it. She can't make him do it. But she certainly can invite, and she certainly can ask, and draw a healthy boundary. If he continues to step over those boundaries and just blasts through those, there's a part where she may eventually have to draw a boundary and saying, we can't continue because you're not in this relationship anymore. You're off in your adultery, with your adulterous heart. You're pursuing that more than me and more than your relationship with God. And therefore, you have to draw a line, and she may have to choose to separate if he refuses to deal with his own heart.
If you're in the middle of a situation where you live every day wondering if there's anything to you, wondering if there's anything beautiful in your soul, if you live in a situation where your husband is failing you in ways that perhaps trigger some very deep fears, and you live every day with just a weight, with a burden, with a dark cloud over your head every moment, then I would love for you to be talking to somebody, an older, wiser woman perhaps, a good counselor, a pastor, a friend, somebody that would help you discover, which can be discovered, could help you discover the roots of your fear, the way in which perhaps your father failed you, that your husband is now continuing, and then traveling the narrow road into life that Christ offers, where you really do discover that there is a beauty in your soul that your husband at his worst can never destroy. If you're not seeing that, then I'd love for you to be chatting with somebody and getting the help that could really restore your awareness that you are God's beautiful daughter, no matter what your husband sees or doesn't see. It's hard to believe that when your husband's not moving toward you, but it's possible to see that and to become a whole woman, pained, hurt, but not destroyed.
Just like a man who's caught in the web of pornography needs to be talking honestly about his own life with a trusted friend or a counselor or a pastor, same is true for a woman who finds out that her husband's caught in the web of pornography. She needs to be having conversations, deep conversations about her own heart, what she's struggling with, what this is doing inside of her, the confusion, the turmoil, the fear, the anger, the hurt. She needs to have another trusted woman that she can be bearing her soul to, that she can be unloading her heart to. And that may be a counselor for her too. That may be a pastor. That has to be somebody that she can trust, who can lead her in good and godly directions as she navigates these troubled waters of wrestling with a husband who's been addicted to porn. A common pitfall that a woman will fall into when she finds out and discovers that her husband's trapped in the web of pornography is that she'll blame herself. She'll take the responsibility in some way for what he's doing. I wasn't pretty enough. I haven't done enough. Maybe I did too much. Whatever. She's scrambling to try to find some reason for why he did this that she can fix. One of the hardest things for a woman to understand is she can't fix him and his struggle. He has to take responsibility for that. And one of the good cardinal rules for good mental health is never assume responsibility for something you don't have total control over. Obviously, she doesn't have control over her man. So if you're a woman whose man is struggling with this, I would say to you, don't take responsibility for his choices. It's not your fault.
Do you ever notice in Genesis 3, when after Eve committed her sin, Adam had committed his, God comes to offer consequences, impose consequences for their sinfulness? And part of the consequence for the woman, part of the consequence for Eve, goes like this. God said, your desire shall be for your husband. That's a bad thing. That's a consequence of the fall. Your desire shall be for your husband. I like the fact that my wife desires me. That's not what the verse means. The word desire is a rather strange word. And without taking time to defend this, what it really means is this. You're going to want to control your husband in order to protect your soul from further damage. And if your basic posture towards your husband is, I've got to find some way to distance myself so he can never hurt me again, whether it's retreating into a sulk, whether it's getting angry and controlling, there are a lot of things that you can do that just compound your own problem. But if rather than that, you were to become very aware and open about the struggles in your soul, and if your husband's moving any good directions at all, to make them known to your husband, as opposed to, well, now listen here, let me explain to you, I'm really mad about this, and you better face up to this. And when you start getting kind of contentious and gripey and angry and frustrated and all that sort of thing, then maybe you're yielding to the judgment on Eve. Maybe you're trying to control something for your own situation. What I would want to encourage you to do is to be very authentic with your husband, not to control him, but to reveal yourself. And that's a very different position to take.
Another common pitfall that I believe women fall into many times is they try to become the policewoman for their husband. They try to police and monitor all of his activities, whether it be internet activity, email, telephone, his travel schedule, everything. They want to get so engrossed, so involved, because they want to make sure this doesn't happen again. And that's their fear. For a woman there, she's playing more into her fear of how can I prevent this from ever happening again and feeling this kind of pain and this kind of betrayal ever again. That's destructive for a woman because it takes the focus off of his responsibility is to deal with his problem. Let him deal with his problem. Let him take responsibility for that. And you have to be able to focus on where's your heart struggling and getting help for your wounded heart through this. One of the things I encourage women whose husbands are trapped is you cannot be his primary accountability partner when it comes to the issue of pornography. He needs to have another man, someone that you both trust, and someone that you as a wife have access to. What I encourage women and the men, that I'm, couples that I work with who are battling with this, is he needs to have a trusted friend that he can either talk to, or he's got to have a good counselor, a pastor that he can really share honestly with his life. And the wife also needs to have access to that man so that there's a dual level of two sets of eyes, not that she's policing him, but if she sees something, she's like, I don't want to go asking him all the time about this, that she can go to the friend and saying, hey, here's something that came up. I'm not sure if there's anything here, but would you follow up with that with him? That takes the pressure off of her of trying to police him all the time, and yet she's able to still help there be some kind of an accountability, and the other man needs to take the initiative to help that husband, to help that man take a look at where is he going, how's he investing his time, what is he doing. One of the ways for a woman to find a release for her own soul in the midst of all the quagmire of the mess of pornography and the firestorm that it causes internally for her, one of the ways for her to find rest is, again, for her to look to God as her sole source of ultimate security. Yeah, her husband, he can be touching her heart and encouraging her in ways that make her feel more secure, but ultimately she can't depend on him as her source of security. And she can't focus on changing him either, that her life gets better if he changes. Now, that's a byproduct. It does happen. But she can't live to change him. What she needs to be able to do is live to honor God with the beauty of her own heart, to honor him and trust him as she reaches out in love to her husband, to encourage him to really follow God's heart.